Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Nathan Rohde, I'm John Manuel. We're back in our old school podcast nook. Nathan, we're relocating, and hopefully the audio quality will be back to our high Baseball America podcast standards, which is kind of a joke. Just trying to have fun with it. It is a podcast. We try to keep it light here at BaseballAmerica.com, but also give you the hardcore baseball talk and information that you've all come to expect from us. We have emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We're going to read some of those in this edition of the podcast. And Nathan and I are going to talk top 100, but Nathan also here to talk about our high school preseason issue. We got our preseason top 50. We got our high school All-America team. Nathan and Matt Blood did a chat the other day. It's all up at baseballamerica.com, so check that out. But let's start off, of course, Nathan, with our top 100. I thought, really, you know, the issue looks fantastic, the issue of the magazine. Obviously, it's online. It looks great online as well. We've got a contest sponsored by Majestic Online, which is something we're really happy about, something we're excited about, a good partnership for us. But a feature in this year's Top 100, Nathan, that we're really excited about, the split decision feature. Maybe it's a little bit, excuse me, a little self-referential, but it is our ranking, it is our list, and people do like to know what goes into it. So we kind of pulled the curtain back a little bit, and you get to see a little bit of the thought process behind how we rank some of these guys. And we had our split decisions. There are 10 of them online, 5 in the magazine. Which one jumped out to you? Which one really kind of captured your fancy, Nathan, as a really intriguing split decision, a difficult choice we had to make?
Well, the most intriguing one to me when I was flipping through the magazine and looking at these was actually Kosuke Fukudome versus Jason Hayward. Because to me, the title really can't say enough about this comparison, apples and oranges. Because to me, you've got Fukudome, who is already an established veteran.
He's basically a big league free agent.
Pretty much, because he played in Japan and played so well in Japan. After Ichiro left, he was really the center of attention. And then you got Jason Hayward, who we all think has the potential to be a future star in the major leagues. And he's 18 years old, while Fukudome is 30. So to me, it's almost, you know, what do you want in the long run? So in a landslide, it's Hayward. But at the same time, if I want to win in 2008, I want Fukudome.
Absolutely.
So it's a very intriguing decision.
If you want to win this decade, if you want to win in 2010, you want Fukudome.
Exactly. So to me, it is an easy decision on one part, but at the same time, it isn't so easy. So what was your thought process in making your decision, and did you actually weigh those different aspects of it?
Yeah, well, that's a hard one. There's no doubt that's a hard one because yeah, to me, if there's any place that's going to rank a guy like a Jason Hayward higher, it's Baseball America. I guess the main thing is with the top 100, you don't do this for every guy, but you're always trying for any prospect ranking. It's short-term gain versus long-term. And I think you're always trying to say who's going to have the best career. But, you know, at this point in Jason Hayward's career, he's pretty raw. He's only the 14th overall pick. And a lot of teams talked about how hard it was to scout him last year because he never got pitched to. So he's really one of the bigger unknowns out of last year's draft, and yet everything we've heard about him, people who have seen him and have seen him, you know, get pitched to and seen him handle velocity and all these kind of things, kind of rave about him. I mean, they all think really, really highly of him. So to me, there's a chance, I think it's a pretty decent chance, that Jason Hayward is a top hitter out of last year's draft who's not Greek. He's not Mike Moustakas. I think Moustakas will be the best hitter out of last year's draft. I'm driving the Mike Moustakas
bandwagon.
Well, I'm trying to think how you say bandwagon, stalinika in Greek. I forgot it. So for me, Jason Hayward's probably the most intriguing high school hitter, high school position player after Mike Moustakas in last year's draft. So that's why, to me, he has to rank kind of high. Fukudome is going to rank pretty high on our top 20 rookies. We're working on our Major League preview right now, and that'll be on newsstands in a couple weeks. If you're a subscriber, you'll be getting it pretty in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. So you look forward to that. And Fukudome is going to rank pretty high on that ranking. But I think number 30, to me, you know, I think that there's a real consensus, and I just talked to a scout who scouts Japan for another feature we're doing, over email this week, and he's pretty high on Fukudome. He's higher on Fukudome than we are, and he's also higher on Hideki Kuroki. I think I got his name.
Kuroda.
Kuroda. I think it's Hiroki Kuroda, the right-handed pitcher for the Dodgers. He's a little bit higher on Kuroda than we are, too. And I think that, you know, we're going to take that into account for our rookies list. We didn't rank Kuroda in the top 100. I think a little bit more information that we just got is just a different scout's opinion than who we talked to before. We're always gathering more information. Kind of has changed my mind a little bit. I've come around on Kuroda, but that's another. You could go apples and oranges on Kuroda versus a younger pitcher, who's in this range. Say Nick Adenhart, who's at 24. Who would you rather have? For 3 years, I'd rather have Fukudome and Kuroda. Long-term, major league career, I think I'd rather have Adenhart and Jason Hayward, and that's the balance we're trying to strike in the split decisions at Baseball America. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Nathan Rohde. I'm John Manuel. We're talking a little bit about our split decisions. Another split decision that I really enjoyed working on, Nathan, was the first baseman, which we had on the next page, where we're talking about three guys that are pretty similar, but have some differences. Lars Anderson, Joey Votto, Derek Barton. The crazy thing is I did not expect that I would be the Derek Barton defender. And maybe I'm putting a little bit too much into the small sample size, but he hit for power in September last year in the PCL playoffs and again in the major leagues in his big league debut. He was pretty impressive in the Pacific Coast League playoffs. I think he hit 9 home runs in the month of September. He basically had 2 big months last year, June and September, and the rest of the year he was just kind of okay. But I think he's going to hit. And as for the power, I guess I'm banking that he's not going to be the next Sean Burroughs, that he's going to actually develop some of this power. to me, I'll take him over Joey Votto, but I think that, Lars Anderson is a guy who's poised to be a potential top 10 guy in next year's top 100. He could be that good as a hitter. I mean, people are talking about Justin Smoke and Yonder Alonso and, of course, Pedro Alvarez in this year's 2008 draft. I'm not sure those guys were all so much better than Lars Anderson. I think he's got as much offensive upside as any of those guys, especially the two first basemen we're talking about, Smoke and Alonso, or Alan Dykstra, who probably also could be in this conversation at Wake Forest. So you can see where my head is. I'm top 100 high school and top 100 college, top 100 prospects. They're all the top 100s are running together. But was there another split decision that you liked that caught your fancy, or did you like that one as well?
Well, I like the first baseman one as well, because I'm a huge Lars Anderson fan. I think he has a lot of upside. I really fell in love with him last year when the Greenville Drive came to Greensboro, and I was at a game there, and he got jammed on the inside corner. I mean, he literally hit this ball off the handle. And I know Greensboro is small, but he hit it down the left field line, so opposite field for him, off the handle, for a home run.
Wow.
And that's when I was like, this guy has power, this guy can hit to all fields, he's going to be good. And I've been watching him ever since, and I'm a huge fan and cannot wait for him to move up in the ranks. But also, I wanted to take a look at the future ace split decision.
Okay.
Java versus Clay. To me, you can't lose.
Right.
And to a lot of people, you really can't lose with this one. You pick Java. I personally am a little concerned about his past history in terms of his body size and some injury history.
Right.
But I still think he's going to be a great pitcher, whether the Yankees go with him as an ace or a closer. So this one would have been the toughest decision for me. But was it really that hard for you, being a big Java fan and a Red Sox fan, or were you able to split this one down pretty easily?
It was pretty difficult, actually, because I did our Eastern League prospects last year, and Clay Buchholz was unrivaled as the number one prospect in that league. Java was in that league as well, but he didn't qualify, and it was tough. I never asked anybody who I talked to in that league, strangely enough, about Java. They just kept bringing him up. Because I knew he didn't qualify, and I had a deadline, and I had to get this stuff done as soon as I could, and so I wasn't even asking about Java. People kept saying, you aren't going to ask me about Java? I mean, seriously, every manager or scout that I talked to, I'd say, well, sure, if we want to talk about Java Chamberlain, let's talk about him. And that's how the snowball kind of started going for me. I mean, I've seen Java Chamberlain in college. I haven't seen Clay Buchholz, but I've seen them both in the Futures game. Talked to both of them. They're both impressive guys to talk to in person. Clay Buchholz, very confident and just a classic kind of athlete to me. Java Chamberlain is a little different deal, and I honestly think they're two separators for me. One is the fastball. They're both, I mean, they're 3-4. They're both really, really good. And we've seen them both excel already in the major leagues. I think Java Chamberlain pitches off the fastball more, and I'm a fastball guy. I want to see a guy get an out on a fastball in the big leagues when he has to get an out with the fastball. That's the source of my man crush on Nick Blackburn, apparently, and that's what makes Java a little bit better. But I'll also take the makeup. Clay Buchholz has a pretty big strike in his past, makeup-wise. I mean, the guy had this whole deal with the computers and the laptops and when he was at McNeese State and all this stuff. I mean, it's behind him. It was a youthful indiscretion, all that. And he's learned from it. He's not a bad guy. I think he's. You make mistakes when you're a teenager, and you can learn from them and move on. But Jabba Chamberlain's spectacular makeup. It's off the charts makeup. I mean, he's kind of pitching for his dad. I mean, he was raised by this polio dad. Everyone knows the story. I think that's a little extra something for Jabba Chamberlain. It gives me a little extra confidence that he's going to get everything. He has a little extra drive that other players maybe don't have. And the scouts I've talked to have no concerns about the delivery, the arm action. You know, maybe some of them are the same guys that didn't see anything wrong with Mark Pryor 6 or 7 years ago. But I'm pretty confident in Jabba Chamberlain. It sounds like the Yankees are going to handle him with care. The Red Sox are handling Clay Buchholz with care. I think both these guys have a chance to really be superstars. And I had Jabba Chamberlain 1 on my board, on my top 100. So for me, Jabba is the best prospect in baseball. And I actually think he's the best pitching prospect that I've seen at Baseball America in the time I've been here. Mark Pryor and Josh Beckett are probably the two other guys who have come along since I've been here in 1996 who have had that tag. It doesn't mean that those guys became the best pitchers. I'm just saying they were the most hyped pitching prospects, those two guys. And I think Jabba Chamberlain has better command than either one of them and better secondary stuff than Pryor. I think that Beckett has had the best stuff of anybody who's come along since I've been here. Just the 80 fastball, 80 breaking ball. I mean, sick stuff. And also just that cocksure, I know I can dominate you whenever I want attitude that makes him Josh Beckett. Yeah, that uber confidence. I think Chamberlain has some of that, and I think he has some of that nasty streak, too, that Josh Beckett has that also makes Josh Beckett so special. And I just think he's what you want in a pitcher. He's got 4 pitches. 2 of them are 70s, if not 80s, on the 20-80 scale. He's got velocity. He's got a good arm action. He's got durability in terms of his size. The only question is he's got to go out and prove that durability and throw more than 120 innings in a year. And that's really the only question mark that I have about Jabba Chamberlain. So I'm pretty high on Jabba. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Nathan Rohde. I'm John Manuel. Let's read some emails, Nathan. We had 3 of them. We'll talk about one of Brett, I should say. I'm not going to try to pronounce Brett's last name. It looks like it's Krushke, but I guess I just did violate what I said. I am going to try to pronounce his name, Brett Krushke. It's probably not that. Can you talk about one of BA's favorite prospects from a few years back, the enigmatic Ricky Weeks? Is it possible his wrist is now healthy? He could finally put his health issues behind him. What do you see from him the next few years as he enters his prime? What do you think of Ricky Weeks, Nathan? I've had dinner at the Drover with Ricky Weeks. I don't know if I can speak dispassionately about Ricky, because when you go to the Drover with somebody, it's a good deal. It's Omaha's finest, and I have a hard time putting that behind me. What do you think of Ricky Weeks? Do you see for him?
I like Ricky Weeks. I am a little disappointed in his major league performance, you know, last year and the year before. It was, you know, a little underachieving, I think. And yes, I'll give him the fact that he had a wrist injury, and that can bother you definitely a lot at the plate. But I am confident that he may be able to bounce back. He might, if he's not a superstar, that's okay. He can still be a productive second baseman for a team who is going to compete in their division for, you know, a few years now. So I like Ricky Weeks. I think he'll come around. I have not had the pleasure of meeting him like you have, but I have met his brother.
Jamile
is a great kid, and so I like the family. It seems like they all have their heads on straight. So
hard not to root for Ricky Weeks.
Exactly. I think he'll come around, and I think he's in a good position to do so. He just needs to not let the setbacks bother him. Maybe that stint in AAA last year helped him out a little bit, really put things in perspective. And who knows? He could blow up this year.
You know, he's 25 years old. He's really an example to me, Brett, of if you're still listening out there. He's really an example to me of player development that goes on in the major leagues. And this is something I think Baseball America is going to try to do more of in the future, is focus on those young big leaguers and write about them a little bit more, because there is a lot of player development that still goes on in the major leagues. And Ricky's one of those kind of players. You know, his on-base, his OPS has gone up every year he's been in the major leagues. You know, last year was a career high in slugging for him and a career high on base percentage. He draws more walks. He's hitting for more power. His defense is getting better. He still hasn't played more than 118 games in the major leagues. He's got to show some durability. He's got improvements to make, but I think he's going to do it. I think he has the physical ability and athleticism to do it, and he's just not finished developing. He's 25. He'll be 26 in September.
He's still young.
I think he's due to get to that prime when he's 28, 29 years old and really be a Jeff Kent type of offensive player at second base. And that's the kind of future I see for him. And I know that's putting some pretty high expectations on him, but that's what I see out of Ricky Weeks. He's just got sick power, unbelievable bat speed. You just can't teach it. And I think as long as he can stay healthy, he is going to be an exciting big league player, and I think a very productive big league hitter. So for me, I'm still bullish on Ricky Weeks. Got a couple more emails we'll read at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Keeping up with our 2008 New Year's resolution here, Nathan, to read more podcasts, read more podcast questions. Luke Goode also emails, and Luke's email address is baseballamerica12@yahoo.com.
Nice.
So
we
gotta like that.
Love.
Yeah, Luke, I hope you don't get a lot of junk email now. Which prospects do you think are prime for breakouts or big years? Who has a chance to move up in the top 100? His bets are Angel Beltre, Clayton Mortensen, Tim Murphy of UCLA, Garrett Cole, and LJ Hose. So Nathan, if you had to pick to click, Garrett Cole or LJ Hose, who do you like better? If you had to pick one of those guys in a fantasy draft, you're picking a high school player in a fantasy draft, which one would you take?
Right now I'll take Garrett Cole because of the plus fastball. LJ Hose I like. He's an athlete. I think it's going to take a little more seasoning for him to really take off as a prospect in the minor leagues. To me, depending on where he's drafted and how much he's offered, I really don't see I see that there's a good chance he's going to be playing for North Carolina next year. So, and to me, Garrett Cole, you know, he might go straight into the minors. They'll both get developed, but right now, I'll take Garrett Cole.
I think that's a safer bet. You're gonna take the, I think just in general, most scouts would say, give me the hard-throwing right-hander from Southern California over the toolsy outfielder from D.C.
Yes.
I mean, that's just, you know, just going from a straight profile, I would take the guy who's pitching more year-round, who's still in that kind of velocity, probably the best present velocity of any high school pitcher, correct?
Yeah, he does have the best fastball of any of the pitchers that we're seeing right now.
I think I would take Garrett Cole in that fight as well. Angel Beltre, that's the Chris Klein Memorial pick-to-click right there. Angel Beltre, he did not make three of our top 150s, but on the other list was number 27, or number 26, wherever Chris ranked him. Chris loves him some Angel Beltre, and I like him too. There's some questions about the bat from the Arizona League managers I talked to, and that might take some time. But Clayton Mortensen is also a good name to pull out, Luke. I'm a Clayton Mortensen guy. If he matures, and he did some of that last year at Gonzaga, and then the very few college senior drafts who have his combination of present stuff and projectability. So he's a good sleeper pick-to-click as well. I'm turning into Ken Hawk Harrelson here with all my pick-to-clicks. I guess that makes you DJ, which is unfortunate for
you.
That's
too bad.
One last email from William LaCates. I should say Joe LaCates, actually. I'm reading the wrong part of the email. From Easton, Maryland. He thanks us for the podcast, and we say you're welcome. Curious as to how you think Pedro Alvarez's injury will impact his draft status. Given the compacted schedule, he'll never be 100% this season. Do you see a slide in his stock? Is it even comprehensible that with Boris in tow, Alvarez could return for his senior season for more money and a weaker college crop of hitters? So, Joe, thanks for that question. And I have breaking information on Pedro Alvarez. Talked to a couple scouts this morning already, and they're both telling me that, you know, the Boris Corporation and NCAA are both in lockstep on this, and that they don't like to release injury information if they don't have to. So they haven't about Pedro Alvarez's injury. We don't even know which hand it is. The scouts I've talked to, and again, this is what it is. It's scout. This is the rumor and the buzz in the scouting industry, but I'm going to report it as rumor, not as fact. The rumor is that it's a hammet. Ooh. It's a broken hammet. And it's his bottom hand, which is his right hand. And that's a problem.
That's a big problem.
Pedro Alvarez is probably not going to be at 100% all year offensively. Because even when he gets healthy, hitters, and I did this story in 2004 in our minor league preview issue, the worst injury to have for a pitcher is shoulder. Not the worst injury, but a bad injury for a hitter is hand slash wrist. And if for a year or so, you just don't have the same power you used to. And the guys I talked to for that feature never got it back. Jason Stokes, Brad Nelson, these guys are kind of in the where are they now file. It doesn't mean you can't overcome it. Casey Koshman was a guy I talked to for that story, and he overcame it. But Pedro Alvarez, if it's a hammock bone injury, you're going to really not get a straight-up evaluation on Pedro Alvarez's hitting ability all of 2008. It doesn't mean that you can't evaluate him. It's just not going to be the definitive evaluation of him because he's not going to be right. So you can evaluate him defensively when he comes back, and that's an important part of whether or not you're going to commit a major league contract and big-time money to Pedro Alvarez, because he's more valuable if he can play third base. And if he's playing first base, if you project him as a big-league first baseman, well, why would you mess with all that money and the headache of Scott Boras, if you consider it a headache, if you don't have to, if you like Justin Smoke just as much, or if you like Alan Dykstra almost as much, and he's a lot more cost-effective for you, or if you like Brett Wallace almost as much, or if you like Ike Davis almost as much. There are a lot of college first basemen this year. So if you think, if you evaluate Pedro Alvarez on the defense this year, and you don't think he can hack third base, he just doesn't, you're just not going to be as willing to pay for that. So I do think it is in the realm of possibility, Joe, that Pedro Alvarez comes back for senior year. I sincerely doubt it. I don't think it'll happen. I think he'll get the money that he seeks. He's a Boras client. He's really talented. There's a long track record of this guy hitting from high school to college. Team USA, I think he'll do it. I think he'll get paid. But if this is true, if the rumor and the buzz out there that it's a right-hand Hammett injury is true, that's going to cloud the evaluation of this player. And if the evaluation of him is clouded and you're having to commit $10 million to him, or you're being asked to commit $10 million to him, that's tough. It's tougher to do when it's clouded, Nathan. There's no doubt about that. So great questions. Send them in, Jerome, at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We're already running a little late with this podcast because I'm wordy, and we did three podcast questions. But Nathan, we're going to touch on our high school preview issue, very well executed by you and Matt Blood and Daniel Bedent. Let's give a shout out to Daniel and our production staff. Really look sharp. Grab a copy of the issue, and let's hit on a couple things in our preseason high school top 50 in our high school preview issue. First of all, Nathan, I think a familiar face at number one in the preseason top 50 in Wilson, Long Beach Wilson High, which I mentioned Sean Burroughs earlier. This is Sean Burroughs' alma mater. It was 10 years ago this year that Sean Burroughs was a senior at Wilson High School and then became a first-round pick. I just have Sean Burroughs in the brain today, apparently. But what made Wilson High our number one team?
Well, they did lose their shortstop, Ryan Dent, who was really the center of their offense last year, and Elliot Glenn, who is now playing for UConn, the right-hander, but they still have Aaron Hicks back, and they still do have, you know, several D1 signees, and they play a very competitive schedule. They played the same schedule last year. They snuck into number one when Seton Hall slipped in May.
Right.
And then
never gave it up.
Exactly. They never could get it back because Seton Hall's schedule is a little weaker. Wilson plays in probably the toughest conference or section or whatever you want to call it in the country. Because right outside of L.A. and San Diego there, you know, there's a lot of really good high school baseball.
Absolutely.
So the consensus number one with our committee was Wilson.
And they've got talent. Aaron Hicks is a pretty huge talent.
They have very big talent. So it'll be really interesting to see how things play out at the end of March when we have two big tournaments in Southern California, where at the National Classic, which will be in Placentia, California, outside of Anaheim.
The Phil Nevin Classic.
The Phil Nevin Classic. There will be seven teams from our preseason top 50 in that tournament. So we're really going to get to see how these teams shake out against each other, because they're going to be playing each other in these tournaments. So
I think our other pick to click, kind of our number four team, is the one that we thought was, when we were gathering all the information before the voting, we thought would kind of, that was the odds-on favorite to be number one, but they ended up at number four, and that is American Heritage High from Plantation, Florida, with seven Division I scholarship commitments, two preseason All-Americans, and five players in our top 350 prospects. That's an impressive group. And I think Matt Blood's actually going to get the chance to see them in person coming up later.
Next week.
Yeah, this is just next week.
March
7th
to 9th is the weekend of the tournament in LaGrange. American Heritage will be there, along with Coleman and Charles Flanagan, who are also in our top 50. I really like Heritage. They have a lot of talent on the team. I love Eric Hosmer. I've seen YouTube videos, and this kid just has unbelievable power for being a high school hitter. The knock against Heritage is their schedule is weaker than most Florida, California, or Texas schools. They're 3A. The highest in Florida is 6A, but they really don't play out of that 3A. They don't have a lot of competition where they are. So that's the knock against them, why they probably are at number four right now. But they could prove us wrong. They could go to LaGrange and they could really sweep that tournament and really make a name for themselves. So that's why it's a preseason high school top 50.
Right.
We let it play out through the season. And I think Heritage and Wilson are really going to be the teams to come out of this top 50 with the most news to talk about in terms of proving themselves.
And Heritage, I think you said it very well. Heritage really got next weekend is huge for them.
It is.
To prove themselves on a national kind of stage, and that's why we're going. That's why we're going there. And then you talk about the seven guys at top 50. That's why you're going to the OC, not to see Misha Barton, hopefully,
nope.
You could do that easily at your computer.
I'll do that in my own time.
But you're going out there to see these high school baseball teams. And California is swarming with scouts right now. Aaron Fitt is down in San Diego checking out a lot of the best pitchers in the country at the University of San Diego's tournament this weekend. And then there's going to be a lot of heat down in Georgia next week. And then there's going to be a lot of heat out in the OC when you go out there. So we're trying our best at Baseball America to give you some firsthand information about how that how these all go, and we'll keep covering it as we've always done it and at the high school level and the college level, both at Baseball America, the magazine, and then at BaseballAmerica.com, and here at Baseball America, the podcast. We'll keep spreading the brand out. So, Nathan, we're going to have to hit more high school stuff later on in the year. We might just need to have an amateur podcast, one of these Mondays. But we'll talk more about what Aaron saw in San Diego on Monday's college podcast. And I'm telling you, not next week because you're going to be out of town, but following weeks, we just need to have you and Aaron just have a college high school amateur podcast extravaganza. I just came up with that idea.
That would be great.
I think it'll be good. I think the people out listening would like that too. So until next week's podcast, for Nathan Rohde, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.